So then, I guess licensing? Does everybody here vet the license and send it off for signature, or do you hand it over to the lawyer and say, over to you, or what do people do? Personally, I vet. Throw my own two cents.
I vet them, and then I send them to legal as well.
I coordinate a lot with the lawyers, if they have a lawyer, just to save us time. So I'll vet it, point out the things I think are issues, see if they agree, so that they can back me up when I tell the production they can't use something because it doesn't meet some legal issue. But I vet everything.
Does anybody here ask for drafts of a license agreement early on so that you can be looking for these things before you lock the picture?
Yes, more and more.
Absolutely.
Or I sent the online one to the lawyer just to say, like, what do I need to do here? Or is this going to be okay? So,
does anybody look closely at the CBC license agreement that might be in there?
Yeah, it hasn't been changed in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, we let that one go so often, and I had one client who questioned it, and Paul pulled that clause. For the indemnification, for it was for a Smithsonian. And I kind of thought that one was just like, we were all happy with it, and it didn't need rereading or vetting or anything. And
some of us.
It hasn't changed in a long time.
Worked with lawyers who do never, ever does any contract. Is it ever okay without a tweak of some kind?
Jeff Axelrod calls them pen happy.
I like that. And I like to find that out before picture lock if I can.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly vet everything for the term, the territory, and the market, and the licensor name, which they almost always get wrong. Because every production company often has a different incorporated name for that particular project, so that's always got to be right. And somewhere along the line, somebody has heard a different name, they will stick it in, so I'm often looking for that. I'm always looking for the credit note, because I'll try and often, I know they don't want 24 words in credit, they want getting images in credit, so I often usually try and get that changed. But you're right, some of those other clauses, I certainly do ask them, I say, you know, are we running these by your legal team, and some of them are good, and they'll say, yes, we have an in-house lawyer counsel who will do that. Others will say, no, I'll probably just go with it.
Well, they're the ones signing it, right? So, and if they're paying they're paying counsel, you know. I mean, it's great. We've brought the footage in. It's a bit late to start changing your edit because you don't like the CBC license agreement. I mean, I don't know. But he has removed that clause. So I think he recognizes that it's...
And what was that clause, sir?
It's the indemnification clause where they say they won't indemnify anybody against...
I mean, it just removed it that one time. It's not
something that they've taken out. Yeah, it was for Smithsonian, because Smithsonian wouldn't accept it.
Yeah, Smithsonian has quite a few things they don't. Once you've been through it, though, it's a learning experience because now I look for those clauses. You have the injunctive.
It would be interesting if we could have, maybe to save everybody a lot of time, if we had somewhere to refer to for the license agreements that are used on a regular basis by us, by some of our familiar providers, that might save us that time, you know, that we could say, okay, this is cool.
Right. But somebody would have to update it. That would be the hard part, right? Like keeping them current.
Yeah.
But it's a great idea.
You mean having like a list of like, say, 20 agreements, like ABC,
sample.
Yeah, like this has been accepted by everybody, and, you know.
Well, one thing we've been talking about with the VRSC, we've talked about it for our own deal memos, which is something we're working on.
That's really
a template for that. And then the other one is later on, we just only talk casually about it, but is doing something around license agreements, not a template for a license agreement, but just all of the things that should be in one, that you should not want to see in one. What does some of this stuff mean? You know,
the Law Society has a really good contract class. I took it. It's like a 1 day, it's a half a day, a whole day if you have, can afford it. And they actually go through the entertainment contracts, a boilerplate, and just explain a lot of the clauses that are in it, like what to look out for. And then if you can afford it, you can stay for the workshop in the evening. And they actually will walk through it. I only did the half a day.
That's the Ontario Law Society?
Yeah, it's through OSGID. They do, like, I don't know if you have the money, but they, I did this in Montreal at McGill, but they have the 1 week kind of entertainment law, which it's not real, but it's like entertainment law, but it's a 1 week certificate program. And basically, it's like every day there's a seminar and it covers all kind of legal issues or aspects to look out for in throughout, like production, photos, licensing, trying to think of some of the other stuff we covered. But like every day there's something, it's like little seminars throughout the week, and you get a nice little certificate at the end. And then they have like an LLM, which I'm maybe doing next year, in entertainment law, but that's like super expensive, and it's like a full 2 year program, part-time, but it's like a class a month. You cover a different topic, and it covers a little more intensely kind of the legal aspect of the entertainment industry.
Great. What is this, like, what do you get as a certification after that?
For the 2 year, it's an LLM, so it's like just really limited, it's not a law degree.
You can't practice law.
Well, I'll be a paralegal, so I'll be like an LLM paralegal in entertainment, but for the 1 week, you get just like a certificate that just says you completed the program.
Right, yeah.
Let's get on the resume.
We should just hire you to do
tutorial. Like when I look at an agreement now, I go, that is the lawyers. I was like, you know, you're not allowed to edit the photos or do anything to it. They're like, what?
Oh, goodness. That clause is bullshit.
But because I work so much in news.
Yeah. Look at it, you put a zoom on any photograph.
Yeah,
like you vultured it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I know for like for news content, it's really important to keep it as real as possible.
Yeah.
Right? Because when I was looking through, I think it's CONUS, their agreement has a really specific clause about that. And I had to keep pointing it out, and everybody just keeps ignoring it. There's a blur.
But then they're signing the agreement, and
that's,
they ought to know they're violating the contract.
My
but it's
email,
up to them. They don't care.
That's why I sent my last email
you.
To the company. I was like, did I keep, because I do the rundowns for each episode as it locks for their legal, like their business affairs. And so I put everything that's in it, do the rundown, hand it off, and say, read your agreement. Please note the following, blah, 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 blah. You accept third-party risk, because I was like, no risk. It's like, well, just so you know, there is risk. It could be minor, but you have to accept that there's some there. It's not 100% foolproof. So that's just what I put in my emails when I finish up the project.
That's not light. That doesn't include like a zoom or a pan across an image.
No,
or something.
You can light and darken. Like, there's really small things that you can do, but you can't say... Like, I know there's one shot they're going to do it to, but there's a shot, and there's a strawberry shortcake doll in the corner, and we can't show it, so they're going to have to blur it, but it's news footage, so technically you're not supposed to be blurring it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I worked at Canadian Press, so that was, like, in our agreements, where it was, like, really explicit.
I thought you had to blur your faces for your lawyer, because...
I know, but in news
but
footage, if you're licensing, especially for documentary, is different.
Yeah.
And even fair dealing, fair use, it's really hard to prove that, right? So when you have photos from a news agency, they have a very specific policy, and they tell you what you're allowed to do to the photos.
Like Reuters, for example.
Yeah, and CP, they all have the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if it's for like a newscast, they can blur the picture, the face,
right?
Because that's ephemeral media. That's like, you know, that's news. But if it's a documentary, you're kind of, you just ask permission. It's like, we're gonna have to do this. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, if it's news material, you're not supposed to, you're not allowed to kind of thing. You're supposed to keep it in its pure.
Right.
Can't do the Joseph Stalin thing and just erase people from history.
As tempting as it is.
Well,
there's no news footage has never been doctored.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Good point.
It's hilarious.
But by then. Well, yeah.
A lot of places are very flexible about that. Mm-hmm. I struggle to think. I've contacted them many times about we need to crop an image or whatever. And there's never been a problem. I just make sure I have it in an email, and I print the email out, and I attach it to the license agreement that they agree to that.
Yeah, so cropping and stuff is fine.
Oh, so you bring it to their attention that
they
it is being
specifically considered adulterating.
I've
oh,
seen
really?
Sources
I know
say
they add that in. What we start doing is the animation graphic. You know, when you put it and make it 3D, you make
right.
it look like it's moving.
Right.
I had to get special permission for that because
yeah.
we took a.
I have to do that situation too.
Yeah.
You have to. As long as you show them and tell them and explain to them what you're
yeah.
doing,
yeah,
and you're not
usually okay, but you absolutely have to let them know that that's what you're doing.
You're maintaining the integrity of the image.
Yeah.
Or I had like the Canadian Museum of Civilization, you can change it up to 10%.
And that's objective
10%.
I do that with music. It comes in at a speed of music. I'm like, what's your threshold that I can speed this up to like 4%? Like, we're doing 4%. Then we do 5.
Okay.
Are we at the end report stage? Or
Do we want to do anything about negotiating the costs or anything like that? Or is that sort of self-explanatory? Or probably it is. Do your best.
I think there should
ask
be some discussion of that.
Well,
I think it's helpful
yeah.
to see what the approach. I'm curious to know what other people's approaches are. I've had a couple of instances this week where I've had to really bring prices down and figured out how I was going to approach it. And I was successful, but I'm curious what other people do. How
so this
play.
Was the case like where they locked it, and so you had to stick with those sources and that much material
yes,
from those, but you
yes.
had to try and in turn bring
yes,
that.
And it, you know, I find with Europeans, you get a lot of really super high 1 minute minimum,
mm-hmm.
super crazy
right.
prices, right? And I mean, recently I had one for like 3,800 euros for a minute or part thereof. It's like $7,000 or something.
Things too. And it's been the most frustrating part of my role on in a not-for-profit organization.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
It's kind of, we were trying to save money on the French versions of the e-courses that we're making, and I'm working on the French courses, so I'm kind of trying to be a bit of a fair-dealing bandit,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to really work within that. But I encountered a situation where I was trying to use TFO material for
mm-hmm.
TV, working at TVO, and it was pre-divorce material for when the two kind of split off, and we were they own most of it, so we were being charged something like $2,000 for 2 minutes, you know, of something that we might have been involved in creating at
mm-hmm.
one point. So it's nothing but frustration. I find the negotiation process to be very intimidating. Actually,
and you say you're nonprofit, though, right?
We are nonprofit.
But you tell them that in your email.
We tell them that.
Because
they're
special rate for nonprofit.
And it still doesn't make, I
wow.
feel, much of a difference.
That's as petty as now.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, because I think there's different ways to approach it. I mean, you can attack it at, you know, hitting the minimums, right?
Yeah.
Like trying to get those minimums down from 1 minute
to 30 seconds.
To or
seconds.
From 30 seconds to a 20 second,
right.
even if you're
right.
only using 8 seconds, which happens a lot, right? And then, you know, the per second. So how much do you tell them? And, you know, and these people who come out and ask you what your budget is, I mean, I don't even answer that question ever. Ever. Like, you know. So I'm just curious about other people's approaches to that. Do they have a, you know, like a
There's the begging. There's the
there's the
charming.
There's the charming.
Yeah.
There's the begging again.
The begging.
There's
the begging.
There's the like I've got to pull this out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And meaning it.
I know.
So and that's work too. So I don't know. Those are my five tips.
I
usually
do that too, and I tell producers up front, like if you're not going to pay for it, you have to accept that you might not be able to use that shot.
Yeah.
So I go into whomever has it, and it's like, well, we're going to pull it. And it's like, chicken, game of chicken, see if they're going to say yes or no or come down.
Yeah.
Music's a little different. When I do music licensing, I do most favorite nations.
Yeah.
So it depends on what series. If I'm working on a series, I just set the rate right up front, and I send it out as a pitch to everybody.
in the industry, and I'd say, here's what I'm going to pay you, what songs can you give me? And then I curate the program based on whatever music will fit within that budget that I'm allowed to work within. And I offer a little higher than I know most of the programs do, so I get a little better selection, and they like me better. So I get a lot more to work from the footage. I don't know, ask what their rates are, and try to fight with them.
Mm-hmm. Do all of our new members know what MFN is?
Vaguely, but I don't really know how it works.
Maybe we should just explain it a little bit.
Most favored nations.
Yeah.
So no one gets paid more or less than the other person. So,
right. So quite often they'll say, what are you paying everybody else? We want the same thing.
It's more the music industry, right?
It's music. I've had it with some clips.
So meaning if you're licensing certain music, like it all has to be the same price?
Like? Yeah. So you're paying, like if it's a sync and master, both, like, I'll give you $1,000 for one side, $1,000 for the other. So everybody gets $2,000. So it's the Rolling Stones or the Arkells, they're all getting paid the same amount of money.
Oh, within the clip, not like various.
I place music in the show, so it's an actual song that I'm placing. It's not within the clip. Clip music, I mean, you can do it. I try to go lower because it's part of the picture. It really depends on the context of use.
But I mean, the costs are not the same. Like, for example, if you're using one clip or one sample of music in this part of the documentary and another, that they all have to be the same.
That's what MFN is.
You're paying
everybody the same amount.
Okay.
Licensing the same amount for music specifically. So if I have five tracks, all five tracks are getting the same dollar amount.
As long as you have 30, all 30 have to. And when Warner says, we're not going to go for that, and you start crying because your budget has now gone from 30,000 to 45,000, that's what's going to happen. Just because one,
Abby and I fight all the time.
Abby
Diamond, he's the Warner guy, so I fight with him all the time.
Is he in Canada? I've been dealing with. I always deal with
U.S.
states, and
no
it's
longer.
Been Elizabeth Henderson. I'm dealing with her right now.
Did she take it? Because they're sending everything to the Canadian office now.
She didn't.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They use most favored nations in Hollywood. They're fairly open to it there, where they might say if you're doing film that's got making a documentary that's got film clips from a number of studios, you can go to them and say it's all like $12,000 a clip. You can go to them and say, okay, would you agree to $5,000? And as long as they see, and often they ask for proof of this, they see the other ones are all getting $5,000, then they'll agree to it.
So you start with kind of one or two and try to hammer something out, and then.
Yeah, it takes quite a bit of time to pull this off.
I've only noticed it when it was a music issue. But.
Well, especially, you sort of know what your budget will be. You've got this budget, you have 10 songs. You can give them $12.50 US for each song. You know you can do that, but you want to make sure you're not maxing out your budget at that amount, because you can be pretty sure that it's not going to go your way. So always give yourself some leeway there. But you can get, like, I had 20, well, 30 songs, I had 15 publishers, 14 maybe, because some songs will have four publishers.
Hip-hop's
a
nightmare. Hip-hop's a nightmare.
Oh, thank God I didn't do that project. So you've got, you get everybody to say yes, and then you have one holdout. And I'm just going to burst into tears if I talk about it anymore. But it is very, very beggy, crying, pleading, and they don't care, and they will not answer their telephone.
You're talking about music here?
Music, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. So, because that's where MFN is the most, where you're going to meet it the most. But I have had it under those circumstances, too, with Hollywood studios.
Yes. And you can use the premise for negotiating. I mean, I did that just this week. We had a very unique piece of material from an independent producer, and they wanted $150 a second. I took that back to the team, and the team said, wow, that's kind of high. I said, yes, it is kind of high, but it's a unique piece of material. This person's dead. Nobody else has it. You can't reshoot it. And they said, So they said, well, let's counteroffer. I said, okay, what are you going to come in at? And they wanted to go down to 85. I said, that's a pretty big cut. So we kind of said to them, that between CBS, Fox, and ABC, they were all sort of in the $72 to $85 range. If we committed to the 60 seconds, they were still going to stand to make $5,000 out of it. And I think in the bottom line, the producer went, oh, this is going to be a $5,000 sale. I'm good with that. Like, it worked. I think the whole 150 was probably some figure he had in his head from the last time somebody asked him to buy something. You know, he didn't really know. So with that same mentality, it could be a good negotiating contact.
So
attack, that might work.
I like your approach that instead of being on the receiving end and on the defensive mode for the 60-second minimum, you're offering it. You're saying, like, look, we are going to use a lot.
Yeah.
It is really unique footage. We are going to be using as much. This is how much we're,
And we went to go to transcribe, because they didn't have a transcription, we offered them back the copy of the transcription for this whole thing, which was just another little nice little, I think they realized we were serious, and sometimes that's all it takes, is they want to know that you're serious and not going to.
And you compare them to, like, the majors, too. So
that's
like, when I get, like, independent, like photographers on clear and stuff, they're like, what do you usually pay? It's like, $175. Which is not true.
Then they also go online.
That's my rate.
Rate cards online. I had a guy not so long ago, and he was in his late 80s, and he was talking to him on the phone, and he's, well, dear, what do you think it would be worth? And I said, well, you know, let me throw this. And then he said, let me think about it. And then he got back, he said, I went online and I can see that the company you're working
for
charges this much for their footage.
Oh.
Gotcha.
Oh. And you're always so happy. I don't know. I'm always happy if the little guy or the person who will, you know, gets more. I'm not going to, like, try to beat them down with a stick if I can help it. And let the producer make that decision.
Right. I think, too, it's important, I find, for me, I don't always side with the producer, and I don't always side with the with the supplier, because I have to go back to that supplier. I may never see this producer again.
You want to be ethical
and I may never want to see that producer again.
Yeah.
So you try to, I find, when I do it, I try to find a balance. Like, if the producer is saying $35 instead of $150, then, you know, I very clearly say that's just not going to work, and it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to do better than that. Or if they're unreasonable, the suppliers are being unreasonable, then you deal with that and try to bring them down and around.
That's a good point.
But I always try to be in the middle, because in the end, because I do have to go back to the suppliers, that is, to me, a more important relationship than my relationship with the producers, frankly. And I want to do what they need me to do for them so they can make their film. But it's not my film. It's their film. And I don't any longer commit myself emotionally to those things, because they, it's too much for you to hold on to all the time. So if you find that middle row, or that walk that middle line between the two, so you can find something that's fair for both of them, I think it always, it just works out better for you.
What would you do?
Sorry. Go ahead.
What would you do if this is a very specific situation? Someone is giving you footage, selling you footage that is, they don't have any rights to. It's like an access-only thing. And it turns out the quote-unquote master that they're giving you is not better than what you can get from, like, YouTube. But you've sort of already gone through this process of talking to them. So, I mean, like, even ordering a master that's, like, master quality, everything's in air quotes here, that is watermarked, you know, and they've given that to you, but my post-production supervisor is looking at it, and she's like, I can't tell the difference between the, you know, standard definition copy that we ripped from YouTube to this supposed master copy from someone who doesn't own the footage at all and is just making money off of it, kind of.
They may have stolen it from YouTube in the first place.
Yeah, I wouldn't be giving them a penny.
Well, the YouTube is has their watermark on it, so they uploaded it to YouTube.
Oh.
So, like, I can verify that they were the person.
Source.
Put,
The YouTube clip and then the master. Yeah.
So you need them for the footage, but it's not in the quality you were expecting. Is that right?
We don't need anything.
Do you need them to sign a quick claim statement? Like, how are you papering it at the end? Like, are you doing, you're only getting access, so somewhere along the line, you're going to need some kind of statement that you're using it in fair dealing, you've done due diligence.
Well, I mean,
you're going to sign a quick claim
saying. We're clearing it through different channels, right? Like, I mean, in some cases, we're clearing it with a company that didn't, that doesn't have it, so we need
right.
the
yeah.
copy and then the clearance.
So you're just paying an access
over
fee.
Here, access over here.
Yeah.
Are they charging you a license fee or just a minimum
just an
access? Yeah.
Well, they sound like they made it public. They put it on YouTube. Oh, but you're saying
with a watermark. So they're releasing.
Why can't they get you a
with
copy?
A watermark that can be edited around? Like, you know what I mean?
There's always a master somewhere.
And why?
Yeah,
they
probably
are they
don't
telling
have
you that
they stole a. They probably don't have a better quality master.
They
because,
well,
don't, yeah.
yeah, Laura
that's
can
what
speak
we're beginning to realize.
Yeah,
you're right, Laura. Why don't they have a better copy? We're wondering.
Well, because it's 480p or whatever on YouTube is, as far as I can tell, a VHS quality copy. Like that's what a lot of television commercials seem to exist at. So.
What so it's
that?
Either you take it at what you get it and you make it work, or you don't have a better source.
Yeah, I guess what it comes down to is we can get this for free. It's the question is sort of like ethically or whatever else, is it just a bad idea and should we just order it anyway?
That person would have to, where's the onus of proof? That person would have to prove that they're the only holder of that footage to bring a...
Right, and
you,
I kind
right?
of figured we can get away with it. I'm just asking if it's a bad idea. It's someone we might want to work with in the future, so
then
I don't
that's
know.
That's up to
you.
You
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't want it to be up to me.
What's the footage?
I'm just curious.
It's a couple of commercials of we're doing like a lot of toy commercials and stuff like that from the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It's that sort of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know who owns it. So you're clearing through the owners, but access...
Yeah, I mean, in this case, yeah, basically. We've gone through the company that manufactured the product, and they seem to be sort of more or less letting us use it. I don't know.
They're willing to sign off on it, whatever.
Yeah.
However,
and, and there's also, like, maybe one commercial is, like, his master copy is slightly better, so we want to use that, but the other one is not. So it's kind of like, do we just pay for both of them anyway? Or...
It's like VHS stuff.
Right.
Did
oh,
he,
yeah.
Like, he, so this is like the person who has the commercial, not someone who actually
it's like media monitoring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
media monitoring, yeah.
Have you
but
tried?
We take whatever we can get, because there's nothing out there.
No.
Right.
Sure.
No.
Yeah. Did you try somebody like Streamline Films to see if they, yeah, so you tried all those guys to see if somebody had one, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've been helpful for one or two, but not for
yeah, because they really try hard.
What's
yeah.
the big ad company that has all kinds of ads?
It might be on our sheets.
Yeah, there's a couple
yeah,
of commercial holders.
I was thinking about your European rates. Have you ever been successful saying to a European provider, you're at 4,000 euros with 1 minute? I normally pay 3,000 Canadian dollars for, you know, 1 minute. Like, countering with a North American.
Oh, yeah. I was very successful. I was very successful in bringing her down very quickly. I told her I thought that price was just, you know, off the board there. Like, never heard of anything
yeah,
like that.
I get the impression you deal with quite a lot of European archives.
Yeah,
so have a lot,
yeah.
So
and I just compared it to BBC and Getty, and I first of all asked her, because we only need like 15 seconds, we certainly don't need a minute, I asked her right away if she would reduce the minimum to 30, and she said, fine, no problem. And then I proposed a $80 per second Canadian, and she went with it. So, look at the difference of that, 3,800 euros.
Yeah, but is that something that you've generally had success with other European broadcasters?
Yeah, pretty, it's been pretty successful, yeah. I mean, they're really off the mark with their pricing.
They are, and it's been a disincentive for me even to go there,
yeah,
because
exactly.
I don't have the confidence to know what the later on that I can do
and
that.
And with
somebody
can't do it.
Oh yeah, just keep trying and just tell them you've been in the business for 30 years and this is really
this is right.
off the mark. Like, you know, and then throw in Getty and BBC and...
I'll throw in WPA.
Mm-hmm.
That one really gets them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would still,
they'll just
yeah,
turn around.
That's like the dollar, that's
some,
dollar store.
Move, no matter what.
Yeah, I'm afraid they'll turn around and compare
with,
it to, well, you know, we're
a
DF and we're going to pay
minimum.
And compare it to INA. You know,
yeah.
We're going to compare it to the Dutch TV and
Ina, you
like
know,
whatever. And they'll say, well, this is what the European rates are like.
Ina. I asked them to lower their...
Just for example, I didn't mean to...
No, but I asked them to lower their minimum, and they declined. And so kind of just went with it. And it was interesting because when the producer was signing off, she said, oh, do you think you could just carve out the theatrical and... I think we had asked for art house, but she worded it some other way. Anyways, she got the discount. Coming directly from the person paying the bill.
That's right, because you're offloading all of that to the blind producer.
So,
here's the bill. You want it to come down, you work for it. You compare. You charm.
Well, she's the husband of the director, so I mean, she's very sweet. She's doing all of the work,
yeah.
And so I said, good on you.
That's a good point, though, back to our negotiation tactics. Another good one is see if you can find a common thread or a likeness for this person to want, this supplier to want to be a part of your project.
Yeah.
You know, I'm working right now on a highly scientific research one, and... You know, talking to these scientists, like, they don't know anything about television, they don't have time, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they mentioned David Suzuki, and suddenly, like, oh, we love David
oh,
Suzuki,
they love
blah,
him.
Blah, blah. Oh, your documentary's going to be on. Oh, how can we help?
Everything.
It was like, yeah, it was, you know, like, some of you can find
listen,
a little...
For 20 years, that got me through the door.
David Suzuki.
I'm working with the David Suzuki.
So now you just say, David Suzuki isn't
you
working
just,
on this. It still works for you.
Well, it works a lot with environmental, that's
yeah.
for sure. Because whatever your topic is, if people are, you know, passionate about it.
Right, yeah. That's
I mean, Greenpeace, you were talking about Greenpeace the other day. I mean, their prices have always been amazing for me. I mean,
not
just because of the nature of things, but, you know... For any sort of environmental thing,
but you do so much of that. It's probably
that's
the
true.
Gina
they
Kelly
probably
yeah.
it's probably like a lost leader for them because they want to keep you, so they know you're going to come X number of times.
That's $9
so.
A second or something. It's
okay,
like,
Gina,
oh,
we're
wow.
Just, I'm going to call you next time.
Yeah.
Greenpeace.
You'll become our Greenpeace representative.
Exactly. Go through you for everything.
Our broker.
Anyways,
are we?
Yeah.
Any other tips for negotiating? License costs. I think that's probably covers it.
Our last